Welcome to Legal Nurse Podcast, where you will get tips to expand your legal nurse consulting skills. Every week, you'll hear from experts from within and outside of legal nurse consulting. They will share their knowledge to help you grow. Your show is moderated by Pat Iyer, a legal nurse consultant with 30 years experience. So, join our community, sit back, relax, and get ready to learn. Here's Pat.
Hi, this is Pat Iyer with Legal Nurse Podcast. And today we're going to talk about something that is on all of our minds, and that is coping with fear. There's a lot of fear and anxiety as we're recording this during the pandemic, and our lives have changed in ways that we never, ever expected. I brought on the show Deborah Morrison, who has an interest in both finance and in handling fear. She is identified as a financees person who translates that economic language into terms to help people understand some of the nuances of investing. And if you follow the stock market at all, which my husband does, you know that it's been going up and down and up and down and up and down, creating a lot of shaky confidence and not so great confidence in the stock market. But we're going to not be talking today about the stock market. We're going to be talking about the fear that affects all of us. Welcome to the show, Deborah.
Thanks, Pat.
Let's talk about a statement that you gave me as we were preparing for this, which is fear is not the problem. What does that mean?
Well, I have to credit and am overjoyed to credit my dear late friend, Dr. Susan Jeffers, who wrote a number of New York Times bestselling books. One of the most groundbreaking for me was Feel the Fear and Do It Anyway. And to quote Susan, she said, if everybody feels fear when approaching something totally new in life, and yet so many are actually out there doing it despite their fear, then we must conclude that fear isn't the problem, but rather how we hold the fear. And that has been such a foundation statement for me. It's completely seismic in its power, is it not?
It is. You know, when you were saying that, I was immediately thinking about the people who attach bungee ropes to their ankles and jump from high places. And sometimes they jump voluntarily and sometimes they are pushed. And yet they've got that fear that lasts for several seconds until they get into the act of falling hundreds of feet. And yet the people who are up there whose job it is every day to push those people off the edge, they certainly don't feel any fear, and they probably jump for fun when they're done.
Exactly.
So if fear is not the problem, and it's our reactions to the way that we experience fear, what can we do in terms of understanding that continuum from pain to power to fear?
Exactly, Pat. And what I've done is, I'm going to give you this afterwards, but this is Susan Jeffers' pain to power continuum. And I just love how she established this as a continuum, because I think it gives us all hope, right? We don't have to take up residence over here in our painful emotions. And so, if we're holding our fear from a position of pain and we're feeling helpless, we know that there are dotted lines and there is at the other end of that spectrum choice. We know if we're holding our fear out of a position of pain, we could fall into depression, but we also know that that depression can segment over to what I call like opportunity as a midpoint here, Pat, and then excitement to your bungee jumping example. And we know that if we can, if we're holding our pain and it actually paralyzes us, which is sometimes the case, we have the choice to move into action. So I want to identify that the power that Dr. Jeffers speaks of is not power over, it's power within ourselves. And as I say, we'll give this reference to you at the end so that you can print it out for yourself, because I have these printed out throughout my house. And I have really small ones that I carry with me. So the idea of the continuum is one of hope, I think. And ultimately, we can choose to be in a position of pain or to move towards our empowerment. And it's not a situation where you do it once and you're done. This is a lifelong endeavor. We might slip along here and slip back. We might step along here and slip back. But we know that the presence of the continuum gives us hope to rethink how we're holding our fear. And once we've gotten over here to holding it within our own personal power, it's like you've stepped into the river. You can never look back and say, oh, I can't do that, because you can reference, oh, I did that before and it felt good. So, you know, I'm not just about feeling good, although that's a great genesis from which we can be in our own power and be the brilliance that we each are. So that's the continuum that Dr. Susan Jeffers left us with, and I am forever grateful.
There's so much in what you said, Deborah. Because we live in a culture where we can share our feelings readily and broadcast them to hundreds of people, I was reading a post yesterday on Facebook by somebody who said, it sounds like she's in the paralysis stage of reacting to her fear. She says, I've lost my sense of schedule. I wander around the house. Most of my appointments have been canceled. I don't know what to do with myself. I find myself sitting and staring out of the window. I don't have any routine. And I'm wondering, does that sound to you like the paralysis stage at all?
Absolutely. Absolutely. When circumstances, and they can be external or internal, change. And when they change precipitously, and then when it's a global environment that is filled with change, it's rife. You can't just step out of your door and you go to your neighbors and they don't have that much change. We have this blanket over us, a pall, if you will, of uncertainty. And so this is the kind of thing that can take us off of our center. And I invite her and all the listeners to consider that if they take one little action, it will beget yet another action, because that's how it works. It's like a compounding effect. You don't have to go up to the high dive and take a dive off. You just take a little step, one step more than you took yesterday. And frankly, I think a lot of us are engulfed in grief, just widespread grief. Many of us have lost someone to the COVID virus, or we have lost someone to death of any source. Mm-hmm. But in this time where we can't do the celebrations and the routines, Pat, that casts us into a what now, right? What next? And so I like to invite our listeners to put an S on the end of what next, because what next seems like helplessness, right? What next? And widows and so forth exclaim this statement a lot. What next? I want us to say, apostrophe S, what's next? And now we can start to think, this step and then that step and then that step. And the second we get out of our inertia is the second we empower ourselves.
That's profound, Deborah, because we're all dealing with unexpected changes, disruptions in our lives, our lifestyles. My husband and I run our businesses out of our house, and our lives are not that much different. I don't run out at lunchtime to get food at Chipotle or at the local sub place, but I'm set up to work at home. There are many people who have never worked at home and are now confined to their homes. And there are many extroverts, and some of them may be listening to this who are used to getting their energy from being around other people.
Absolutely.
They can do it through online networking groups, but maybe they're not a member of that group, of any groups. So they are feeling trapped and are, as they've been telling me, and as an introvert, I hear it, but I don't feel it the same way they do. They're feeling like they're not okay. They need to be around people. They need to be stroked. They need to be hugged, and they can't be. So a piece of their personality is not being satisfied.
Yes.
Do you have any thoughts for a person who's experiencing that kind of pain right now?
Well, I am an extrovert, so I identify with a lot of that. And I think it's helpful if we've been a part of a good group to now just double down with those existing relationships. And I'm quite aware that we're in this electronic age where we haven't, you know, I mean, all the jokes about people walking through the subway or walking through town or in the mall or always looking at your cell phone, right? And you miss somebody, you know, right in front of your face. Like it used to be when you were attracting a partner or even a friend, you know, you'd be looking around, you'd see somebody that you identified with, you'd strike up a conversation, but you're going to miss them if we're doing this. And so some of the shallowness of our electronic isolated stage is leading and exacerbating these feelings of desperation. And yet, ultimately, our happiness is an inside job. Extrovert, introvert, let's look within and remind ourselves of our own personal power and also remind ourselves that we're not alone. There's one good thing about this pandemic, and that is that we have this leveling out, if you will, and we're praying for more leveling more swiftly health-wise, but there's this equalization, if you will. No one, aside from people breaking the law, are out there doing that socializing. And so let's be creative. And we have been. There have been Seders, and there have been Easter Zoom dinners together where people from states and countries are gathered together. And drive-by funerals. I just saw it yesterday, a viewing, and people drove their cars. So it's a new age. And the more nimble we can be, Pat, with change, the better off we'll be emotionally. Now, that said, intellect and emotion are on an inverse relationship. So think of a teeter-totter. And when emotions are high, intellect is low. So if we're so charged emotionally and you're just caught up in this moil of emotions, which of course fear is an emotion, then it's going to fog our ability, if not downright shut it down, to think through, what can I do? What action can I take? So to the extent that we can understand that the second we bring anything to the conscious mind, we can now deal with it in a way that we couldn't deal with it when it was just running us subconsciously. So to that extent, I invite us to feel the emotion a lot. Get those tears cried out. And then come into a space, even if you want to schedule yourself like this. Okay, the next 15 minutes, I'm going to think. And I always invite people to emote first because you got to get that out. It's like if we try to keep our emotions down and we kind of say, I'm okay. We're on a Zoom call. I'm okay. It's like trying to keep a beach ball below the surface. The beach ball wants to burst out, wants to bubble up and be expressed like our emotions. But if we continue to focus all of our energy on keeping it down, and then somehow we get distracted and all of a sudden, boop, it pops up to the surface. Immediately, there's this release of energy. And now we can actually deal, right? We can think with our heads and our intellect, and then we can develop strategies and step-by-step baby steps is all we're asking for here, because that's the amount of change we're under. And we're all on a little change overload, right? So we just have to take baby steps, just like we would expect a baby to crawl and then step and walk. Let's not expect ourselves to be expert at this. It's new.
You remind me of something that our mutual coach says. We met through Women's Prosperity Network, and she's been starting our Zoom meetings lately by reminding us that we are all safe.
Absolutely.
That we may be feeling fear and anxiety, but we can put it aside and then be able to participate in the networking or educational event in front of us. You're also making me think, Deborah, about how we get raised culturally. And I am a perfect example by being raised by a woman who is the child of a British-Irish couple, where the British-Irish culture says, don't deal with emotions, keep the stiff upper lip. You have to function in the intellect all the time. Absolutely. Don't deal with the fear, the apologies, you know, always strive to keep yourself in control. Mm-hmm. And you have to unlearn that, because what I discovered in my life is that by always showing that I was invincible, I didn't know how to ask for help when I needed it. So I kept those emotions tamped down. Ultimately, when you tamp them down enough, if you keep shoving them under the rug, you get all these little lumps all over your rug. I know we have to diminish the fear. So we're really talking about two ends, not being able to express fear. And then the other end of the seesaw is, if you're looking at the fear emotion continuum, is when fear disables you and you have almost a panic attack and don't know how to deal with the emotions in order to control your behavior. And I'm thinking about this from also from headlines that I've seen of, it was in the state of Michigan recently, they had a big rally of people who said, hell no, you're not going to tell us that we can't work, we can't be outside, we're going to be in control of what we do. They're reacting to the fear in what I, in my value judgment, say is a irrational, self-destructive way. We can't control this situation, so we're going to be in control. And we don't believe all the experts who say that we can't gather and we can't work. Do you have any comments on that type of response to fear?
Well, I'm loath to judge at this point because I am a grief coach also. I'm a certified grief coach as well as a certified financial planner. And when we're thrust into this sea of uncertainty, it's like our minds and our hearts get into this blender, right? And it's really hard to ferret it out, right? So I can appreciate people's feeling of, I have no other option. This is what I must do. That's a highly charged emotional state, in my humble opinion. So in other words, any ideology, really, when you think of it, is that which runs our life, psyche, actions. Typically, it shapes them anyway. It filters them, right? Like we could both see one event right here, just four fingers together, Pat, you and I, and the rest of our audience, and we could say, okay, what do you see? And there'll be as many viewers, they'll have a different impression of that, because neurolinguistic programming tells us that, you know, 2 to 4 million bits of new information each second. How do we distill what it is that we internalize? Well, our values, your point, you were raised with it, socialization, a society, religious, your family, and you, mistakes you've made, adventures you've taken that have worked well or not so well. And so I think each of us has a notion of what's best, but I've always loved to just, you know, and I mean, I was raised in a farm, like we could do anything. If you didn't know how to do it, you were told to do it. And somehow you figured out how to do it without much guidance. So I have a can-do attitude that some people do not have, don't come by honestly. Yet, ultimately, we really want to open ourselves to experts, particularly at stressful times. Just think of yourself. You're a nurse. If you had, or you had a patient that came in, or you had a friend that had a serious injury or illness, you did not go to the person that is in their last credit of residency and say, hey, what do you think? You went to the Cleveland Clinic. You went to all of the major health experts in the world, probably, if you had enough money and resources and connections. And so why do we treat some things that require really expert opinions differently than others? Well, I think it's because we get emotional and we think, well, my dad wouldn't have done that. You know, this is how I was raised, you know, get to work, you know, and so forth. And so I think that if we can get off of our own soapboxes for a moment, especially in important items, I don't care about the small stuff, then the large items, we must trust experts. And at this point, I think our focus has to be on health experts. The economy will recover. It has always recovered. It will be new and it will recover. Our health is another matter. As you know, in your profession, once your health is impacted, it's generally a compounding effect unless complete intervention is miraculous and just completely reverses that. But I want us to be attentive to that. I've managed money for 42 years for people, and I've managed a lot of money for a lot of rich people. And I say two things. We have two assets in life. I was on CNN Live with Stuart Varney, and he said, well, what's your best asset, Deborah? And I said, it just was given to me. I'm not the smartest. It's given to me. I have two assets, time and health. Well, he had to take a station break. Oh, I've got a certified financial planner here talking about time and health. I know he wanted me to talk about a stock or a mutual fund or real estate. So ultimately, however, you know, money's a tool. And I always say, if money can solve it, it's not a problem. So if we can keep the emphasis on the right syllable, this is a health pandemic first. And many people have lost loved ones and family to the pandemic itself. Ultimately, secondarily, we have jobs to do, and many of us have been able to do them from home. And there's an awful lot of unemployment. Believe me, I know the numbers. Yet it is a health pandemic and life and death for many people, such that that's our focus. And I would prefer all of the Americans to bind together and bond together as the United States of America, party aside, and look at the health professionals and listen to them in order to tamp this down so that we can now create our new next chapter.
Thank you, Deborah. And I do believe that cooler heads will prevail when it comes to following that advice.
Yeah. That's my prayer.
Before I continue, here is two tips for you. If you're interested in privacy and security topics, you may be interested in the upcoming Virtual Health Privacy Summit on June 5th, 2020. The Virtual Health Privacy Summit will bring you the critical privacy and security best practices for every dentist, dental hygienist, dental assistant, dental technician, receptionist, treatment coordinator, practice manager, privacy officer, or owner. Register for the live summit here. Go to https://healthprivacysummit.ca. That link again is https://healthprivacysummit.ca. And now I have a second tip for you, or question. Do you have moments of terror, or doubt, or of questioning your confidence? I know I do. I just told you about my fear. It can undermine you and stop you in your tracks. Here's an offer for some free online training directly from a plaintiff attorney. The training is called Conquer Fear, Capture Confidence. In this training, trial attorney Wayne Schoenberg will address the fears of legal nurse consultants and will show you there is a path that will get you from where you are to where you want to be. Here's just a sample of what Wayne covers in this online training. Four things that keep you from success. How to get past your fears and succeed. Why fear is natural. No one is exempt. You can use these techniques to quickly achieve success and conquer fear and capture confidence. You can learn how to live beyond fear. Get the free training to watch in the comfort of your home by going to this link, http://lnc.tech/. tips/conquer. The link is http://lnc.tips/conquer. You can also reach the training on the show notes at podcast.legalnursebusiness.com. Wayne explains, fear and pride can be two emotions that rob you of peace, love, joy, and happiness. Fear can cause self-doubt and a loss of confidence in the best of people. I'm all about the concept of living beyond fear. Let's shift our focus into the fears that we experience as legal nurse consultants or as expert witnesses. We've talked about that continuum of feeling fearful and developing power. And I think that's no better place evident than when a nurse goes into the courtroom to testify and experiences that flutter of pulse, that butterflies in the feeling stomach of walking through those doors and knowing that there is on the other side of that room an attorney whose job it is to decimate the expert's credibility. Yes. Let's take that situation and think about what advice can we give a person who walks into any situation involving the legal system, is in our profession, is hired to help attorneys with their cases, and has to deal with that high level of anxiety.
Mm-hmm. Well, Pat, this is a profession that I hadn't had a whole lot of appreciation for before because I haven't had personal experience, and yet I certainly have an empathy, and like hearing your stories, it is a massively important role and job that legal nurses, expert witnesses provide and do. And to speak of walking into the courtroom, and you're exactly right, the courtroom is filled again with that this whole confluence of emotion and intellect, right? Because mm-hmm. you're in a courtroom because it's a severe situation, maybe obviously litigious. The patients, whether they're alive or deceased, their history, their story, their legacy rests on your performance and those of your coworkers as nurse legal consultants. And so the task is great. Because your training as nurses probably didn't train you to be expert witnesses. You took some additional courses for that, I'm sure. The issue I think we want to focus upon portray is one of girding on the armor, if you will, before you enter the courtroom. I mean, whomever you were before, whomever you were at the patient's bedside, you're going to have that. Because that is natural. You'll remember. You'll remember on Thursday at 4:00, I went in and the situation was massively different. I mean, this is like, you know, athletes remember the seventh inning, the second pitch, and so forth. Nurses are going to remember the emotional aspects, and you'll be able to turn on that emotional relaying of the instances. You were there. You know it better than anyone. And I want us to invite a grounding of that emotion and of that expert witness, that confidence that is completely steeled. You're steeled in your confidence that you know this case. Then I think it revolves to how is it that you quote unquote win, right? And you've got to win over points sufficient that the jury or the judge is going to decide on behalf of the patient. So I like to role play when I'm into situations that I know are going to be contentious. I role play. I role play with another person, and I've been in neurolinguistic program training. Some people have been in S training, where people shout right here. Anyone that's been in the military, people shout right at your face the most absurd and inane and vulgar things. And your job is to completely be unaffected by that externality. So there's a numbing down, if you will, of sensitivity that is the job for the next 2 hours, 2 weeks, however long. But every day you go into the courtroom, that's your frame of reference as you walk through. And I'm telling you something that, you know, I'm insulting your intelligence, you've done it. Yet I think the aspect of us doing the homework, prepping with a coworker, another nurse or someone, or just a very, very aggressive personality, a person with a very aggressive personality. And that hopefully will give us the confidence, because like most times when we make big mistakes, it's like, oh, that was the first time I ever did it. And if I had that to do again, right? So I don't want the first time that a nurse gets called into the first courtroom, I don't want her first time to be in the courtroom. I want that to already have happened so that now she feels experienced and confident in that experience. Does that make sense?
It does. And attorneys would say to me when I ran my legal nurse consulting business, well, I don't want somebody who's never testified before.
Exactly.
And I would say, but you can't have somebody who's testified before unless you're willing to take a chance on a new person with adequate preparation and role-playing in advance and understanding the rules of how you function in a courtroom. Everyone has to have that first opportunity.
Right.
I also recall a deposition that I went through with an attorney who did exactly what you're talking about, Deborah, who got right in my face. And I remember the details of the case because it was a patient who had a cardiac arrest, and one nurse was using a wall clock to time the events of the cardiac arrest, and another person was using a wristwatch. Yeah. And the clock and the wristwatch are about 10 minutes apart. So we had 30 minutes from the clock to the end and 30 minutes from the wristwatch to the end. Same 30 minutes, but they shifted in terms of start times. So he made the argument that for 10 minutes, nobody did anything. And he got right in my face, and I maintained that it was a difference in timekeeping methods. And he said, well, then if you're wrong, then your opinion is not valid. And I said, but if I'm right, my opinion is valid.
Thank you.
And when it was all over, he contacted me maybe 6 months later. He said, you stood up to me good in that deposition. I want to hire you to help me with this case. So it felt at the moment it was, oh, please get out of my face. But in the long run, taking that position, not getting pushed away from it, is what makes an expert witness valuable in the legal system. To take a stand, firmly plant the feet, and defend that stand in the face of somebody who's 2 inches away from your nose. Mm-hmm. At least feels that way.
Oh, and I'm sure it has been. The issue of standing in your power is much like we're describing in this anti-bullying programming that we're finally undertaking as a society. I mean, a bully will back down when confronted with the truth, or another person that's really not going to back away and be cowed by their bullying. And so you can also, you know, make an analogy that the attorney is like being a big bully and hoping that particularly a woman, and many nurses are women, and they'll just fold as they've seen them fold in the movies and so forth. But that standing in your power, I mean, we've had a number of female reporters asking very firm and good questions of our president, and he seems to not like that kind of standing in your power, especially from women. So we know that it's a sexist society. That is in the system. I'm not saying anything about, oh, she hates men. This has nothing to do with the interpersonal. This is systemic. So the systemic ills, and that includes sexism, also prevail in the courtroom. And if you have a male judge and a female nurse, prosecuting attorney, I can assure you that while he's paid a whole lot better than the nurse, he has a big ego, probably because he paid a whole lot more. And by virtue of the society and the socialization that has given men more than it has given women, systemically, the nurse is in a the female nurse is in a very precarious position. And so when she can come in and completely stand in her power and do so just from the start, it's going to send a message. You can ask the questions that you have on your mind and on your notepad, and I will answer them because I was there.
Believe it or not, Deborah, our time is up.
Oh my gosh.
And I know we had lots more we could cover. We focused on dealing with fear right now, and I think we've very effectively dissected some of the reasons why we are fearful, some of the ways that we display that fear, mm-hmm. personality types, and how they react to being in a period of not being able to interact with others. We talked about a continuum from pain to power, and you shared with us a model that breaks down a couple of different components displaying how we act when we're in pain versus how we act when we stand in our power. And then we drew into the courtroom some of those lessons of being aware that it is a sexist environment in many cases. There are, of course, male judges, there are female judges, there are male attorneys and female attorneys, there are male nurses and female nurses. There's a whole blend. Right. But in my experience, typically, most of the judges are male, and most of the attorneys who are at the trial lawyer level, most of them are male, and most nurses are female, as you've identified that little common pattern, which can create opportunities for attempts at intimidation. That's what testifying and dealing with the cross-examination is all about, is knowing that you will receive attempts to intimidate you, and that it's essential that you be firm in your opinions, even though you might be anxious and fearful inside, to keep that under control and stand true to the position that you've taken on a case.
Excellent. Yeah, the summary is fantastic. And that's just it. You know, you might even say the mantra before you go in the courtroom. Okay, I've had a ton of emotion around this case, and I will continue to. And that is categorically now in onto the side. And this is my intellect right now. And then when you need to draw in the particulars of the case, you invite the emotionalism in, because crying to make a point, especially on a dire circumstance health-wise, is also effective. So it's that managing the emotion. So the only thing I would add, Pat, is the pain power continuum. You mentioned about the actions, and they are, we want to do actions, but it's a feeling kind of a thing. And so I want us to get in touch with the feeling aspect of it, because it's then that we can take those actions, those intellect actions, right? So let's stay in touch with our feelings. More and more of us are getting more in touch with our feelings, and I applaud that.
Is there a way that our listeners can find out more about what you offer?
There is. My website is Empowered Retirement, and it's spelled E-M-P-O-W-E-R-E-D, Retirement, R-E-T-I-R-E-M-E-N-T. And my partner and I have been in business collectively over 66 years, advising people about their money. And we do planning first, Pat, and then we talk about the integration of products. So the planning is the intellect, and we involve our clients' emotions and our goals and so forth. That gives us the semblance and the roadmap, if you will, that we will follow with clients. So it's very different from anyone that's not dealt with a fee-only planner. So I invite your listeners to visit the website. And if you want to go ahead, after you're on the site, and just put /resources, there are a number of resources, of which Dr. Jeffers' Pain Power Continuum is one. So empoweredretirement.com/resources, and please call us with any questions that you may have.
Thank you, Deborah. This has been Pat Iyer and Deborah Morrison talking about fear. We appreciate you spending the time with us today, listening to our conversation. I hope that it has inspired you. I hope it gives you some tangible strategies that you can use to deal with the fear. We all feel the fear. the key is not to be paralyzed by the fear and to move this opportunity for changes in our lifestyle forward. Look at the positive aspects of what's coming out of this. I, for one, Deborah, have heard of many, many, many families who have been connecting on Zoom and talking to each other for the first time in years and seeing each other for the first time in years, particularly when they're distant from each other. So just that one piece alone has had a positive impact on our fabric of families.
Yeah, each moment we choose, Pat, we can be down and we say, I can choose. There's a positive and a negative to everything, a pain and a power, a positive and a negative. Each moment we choose, no one can take your choice away. Exercise that choice for your own empowerment.
That is a great way to end, Deborah. I appreciate your time and your expertise. Be sure to subscribe to this channel if you're watching this video on YouTube, or if you haven't discovered our YouTube channel, look for Legal Nurse Business and you'll find our video podcasts as well as our audio podcasts are on Spotify, Google Play, iTunes/Apple Podcast, and a variety of other platforms.
We hope you enjoyed today's episode. Check out Pat Iyer's resources for legal nurse consultants on LegalNurseBusiness.com. Pat coaches legal nurse consultants so they make more money, get more clients, and avoid expensive mistakes. Check out her coaching program at LNCAcademy.com. Please subscribe to our podcast and leave a review on Apple Podcasts. Join our community to get notified of each new episode and to receive the transcript of today's program. Complete the request form on podcast.legalnursebusiness.com. We appreciate you and your interest.